From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to be looking across the table at Alex Barasa, the regional coordinator for youth and young adult ministry and pastoral juvenil here. That barely fits on a business card, Alex.
Yeah, well, and then is missing confirmation coordinator as well.
Coordinator. Write that right on your business card
just
right
keep
now.
I need an index card.
Yes.
More than a business card.
Are confirmations, they're going on now?
Many of them have finished. I think we're in the last ones. And then there's some in August and September.
Right.
Some parishes are in different cycles.
And in most cases, I mean, there can be exceptions. It's the bishop who does the confirmations.
Yes, the bishop tries to do as many as he can. And then Father Chris is delegated to the ones that he cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have over 100 places.
I know. The bishop could spend his entire time doing just confirmations.
Yes, yes.
And with the travel involved. Yeah.
And then the problem is that he wants to do them nice and significant. So it takes time.
Right.
Right. It's not like he's going to do a half hour one.
And then just boom.
Yeah.
Go someplace else.
Which he does, I mean, do several in one day yet. He gives it his all. I've been to several of them, and I'm always amazed that he's not tired. And he's like, okay, I'm tired, and but he's truly a pastor.
Yeah, he is a pastor first, and it's really obvious. I even know talking to him about his time in Orange County, you know, as a priest and then as an auxiliary bishop, and the stories he tells, they're all very pastoral, you know, about the groups he met with and the different parishes and his fondness for this group or that group, and it's always if anything happens in anywhere in the Southland, I can talk to Bishop Soto, and he'll say, "Oh yeah, now that area of L.A. or that area of Orange County, he knows it, and he knows it here in the Diocese of Sacramento." And I know when he visits, when the bishop visits a parish, it's a big deal, especially some of the smaller parishes in some of the rural areas. You know, it's a big deal, and he doesn't want to just come and go. He wants to be with the people.
Yeah, take time. He was sharing with us in one of the meetings that we have with him. He went up someplace up north, and he can tell you who he met, who he talked to, what he ate. He's so good at this. He remembers names, remembers faces, and then and knows the people. And that's so important for our priest. That's a gift of the Holy Spirit to know the people and remember the name and remember the story.
Right.
So you can have a real relationship, right?
Right.
And he does it very well. I mean, he knows what's going on. You'll say, he doesn't know anything about the North. I mean, he knows what's going on in the North, in the South, in the East, and the West. So
The little mission church burned down in Happy Camp during one of the forest fires, and he went up. They couldn't get into Happy Camp because the roads were all closed because of the fires. But he said mass for all the parishioners in Fort Jones, and I know people up in that area, and they were just so touched that that's a 6-hour ride, and there's the interesting thing about this diocese being so big. There aren't airports all over.
No.
It's not like you can fly from L.A. to SF or Sacramento to Palm Springs or something. There's not an airport in Aetna, or Fort Jones or Wairika.
Yeah, Moises, the associate director of Family Life, who we were talking the other day, him and I, that we should see how we can get an airport, a helicopter.
Oh, wow.
Donated to the diocese. It's like, oh, we should get a, we should start asking for a helicopter to be donated.
Sure.
Because that would be,
I'm sure Channel 3 has an extra one they give you.
Yeah, yeah. And then so, like, that we just hop on the helicopter and come and go.
But well, they say in the what are there, two or three dioceses in Alaska, there might be three, that a lot of the pilots, a lot of the priests are bush pilots, too.
Yeah. That's the way to move. I mean, even in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because so many islands.
So many islands, yeah.
Uh-huh. My friend is a youth ministry director there.
Yeah.
I mean, and they take small planes just to go for coffee with a youth minister.
Sure,
and
sure.
He's like, okay, that's, I can do that, I guess. Yeah. I mean, so it is a blessing.
Well, and in this area, you read about the early people going on horseback to say mass, up, especially up in the foothills, you know, in the gold country.
Yeah, well, Junipero, Saint Junipero Serra, that he would walk it.
He would walk.
I know. I made my kids walk to Walmart the other day because they, I really needed them to do something, and they were all livid. It's like, so far away.
So far away.
It's not far away. I mean, I can see it from the house, you know. I mean, so, but we're so used to being comfortable.
Yep.
Than doing something that is not difficult.
Yeah.
So, but our priest, in our diocese, I think they try their best. We have a good bunch of guys that have said yes to Jesus, and they try, and they try their best. So,
well, in some of the rural areas, I mean, you not only have the parish, you have a couple of mission churches, and they may be an hour away.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What is it? Saint Francis of Assisi, up north by Reading,
Burnie maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they have two little missions, and they have masses. Some the pastor, there's only one priest, and he cannot stay after masses at any of the well, the last one he can, because that's the last one, but by then he needs to kind of eat, right? So it's a sacrifice because he says, you know, I want to stay. I want to take time to eat with people, what have you, but I am on a roll here.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe a Thursday you get a call, somebody's sick, needs you to come out to the home to, you know. And you want to say yes to those things.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I interviewed a deacon from up in that area too, and he was going from Wairika to Fort Jones to various places, you know, all over the North State.
Yeah. It's talk about being missionaries and without leaving your country, right? We think of missionaries in India, in Africa, in Asia. But no, I mean, you can be a missionary here.
Yeah.
I mean, people can truly be.
So what's it mean to be a confirmation coordinator?
I am I'm praying for all the catechists. I'm praying for all the coordinators of confirmation. That's primarily. Yet also I offer support. Mm-hmm. If I have any resources that can help them better engage teenagers, that's where my role comes in. I go, I visit the parishes, I see the programs, and then they ask me, what do you think? What can we change? And I offer some. I always offer praise. I mean, because working with young people, if you're working with young people, God bless you. It's a challenge, yet I am also maybe some lines of how to do it. Not that they're doing it wrong, but maybe more effective to reach out to the young people. So I visit a lot of programs, and then one of our big push this year is, there's several, but one of them is reaching out to the families. We call it the domestic church in church lingo.
Right.
What are we doing to enhance faith at home so confirmation does not become graduation?
That's so well said. So confirmation does not become graduation. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm done with the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And many the challenges that we have is that parents feel that way as well. So how can we work with...
Got to get them through First Holy Communion and confirmation, and then they're on their own.
Yeah. And then you know, what parents say, they'll learn it on their own.
Yeah.
And it's not so. Education needs to be faster.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even at higher education needs to be faster. Somebody has to be teaching. We don't go to college and learn everything just by being there.
Right.
I mean, there's something that needs to happen. Fortunately or fortunately, whatever our opinion, but how can we work with, how can we serve the domestic church, enhance them, the faith, understanding of faith, of church, of life, so then this becomes more of a cycle. Then I did it, I'm done with it, I'm moving on. So that's one of the important aspects that we have. And then the other one is retreats.
Mm-hmm.
How to offer significant, meaningful retreats to young people as moments of personal encounter with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Is in our, we call them the directives. The what every parish program is supposed to do is offer a retreat, but it's so challenging to offer retreats.
Yeah.
And yet it's so meaningful. And then many of our young people, their only experience of personal encounter with Christ was during a retreat in a parish when they were young people. And then, so we're trying to make this bigger. We have movements like REC. We have Search. We're trying to bring in tech to the diocese. We do have some movements that offer retreats, but not every young person experiences that. So we're working on that. And so that's basically what I do. Confirmation, I assist, I listen, I help evaluate.
Do you travel a lot in the diocese with confirmation?
Yeah. I visit. This year I was only able to physically... 35 programs?
Only.
Yes. So we early in the year, we go north with my worker over there, and we visit the north, and then I visit wherever I am invited to, because we need to be invited. Nice, and I visit.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have a lot of classes, and in a 2-hour period, I mean, I walk my 10,000 steps. It's like a lot of walking in this parish. Some programs, I'm thinking Holy Family in Citrus Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Sister has like a system like by the second. I mean, and it's really cool. I mean, just going and visiting all those, seeing the movement that she has. So it's really awesome.
Mm-hmm. What are the, in your mind, when you're dealing with youth, what are their biggest challenges? I look at my kids now, and compared to when I was their age, just the whole world's different.
Yes.
God's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is the same. But, boy, the world's different.
The expectation the perception of the expectation of the world has truly changed from when we were young and growing up. And I think, this is my humble, respectful observation, is that acceptance is what people are looking for. Because when I'm accepted, I belong. And these new generations look at acceptance in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And being accepted in social media, being accepted in person, from the way I dress, the way I look, what I call myself, I mean, it's very interesting to observe. I mean, I'm not a sociologist, so my oldest son is the one studying those things, and he can tell you how right or wrong I am. Usually I'm not right, this is my layman's observation, but I see acceptance as because when we were growing up, you were who you were, and you didn't have to prove yourself, kind of.
I mean,
because we were all part of it, we were all like in it together. And nowadays, it's not like that.
What's one of the attraction of gangs, mm-hmm. they say, is, mm-hmm. is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, belonging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's... It's both good and troubling.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
this need to belong. I mean, we can find it in our church. We can find mm-hmm. it in our families. We can find it in our schools. We can find it in our workplace. Mm-hmm. And it's tragic to see kids trying to find it in a gang.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has mm-hmm. to do with acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And it's not only... gangs are very organized and they have a very specific purpose. Negative, I mean, some gangs can be turned positive, right? But I was listening to this, now that you said it, to this podcast on society, and we listen to a lot of those things in the office. And the gentleman was talking about tribalism.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That we are becoming a tribalistic society.
Yeah, and that's scary.
Uh-huh, yeah, in a very negative sense, yeah. where there's no conversation between groups.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm in this tribe, mm-hmm. and that's that, mm-hmm. and we don't associate with these folks.
Uh huh. Yeah. And it really caught my attention, being that I am from Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. And we do have indigenous people,
sure,
with their own culture, and they bring something positive to the society. Yet what he was talking about is this tribalistic mentality of I build a wall, and either you conquer me or I conquer you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Where there's no sense of what Pope Francis has been calling us to dialogue,
right.
where we can grow from each other.
Right.
And I said, oh, my God, I mean, this is so true. And not only we as adults, the keepers of society, allowing this to happen, I don't think we even know how to stop it. Politics have become, in this way of thinking, tribalistic. I mean, not even people fighting for their ideals. It's just that my ideals are mine, yours are yours, and we're not going
to
mix.
Well, it's interesting to me because... as I observe the political world now, if one party said today is Monday, the other party is instantly going to say, no, it's Tuesday. 100%
on
both
yeah.
sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are so many laws or potential laws, mm-hmm. proposed laws, where you see where it's 100%. One party votes this way, 100% of the other party vote, and you go, there's not one person there that thinks this is a good idea, or one person here that thinks it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I'm this, and I've been told this is the way I'm going to vote, and both parties are both major parties are guilty of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see almost no compromise on mm-hmm. anything.
No dialogue, and
you know, and you see it in. Not just in the national level, but you see a so-called blue state where they're able to put their agenda in, and a so-called red state where they're able to put their agenda in, and they're just diametrically opposed.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they we have two countries.
I don't know if they do it on purpose. Just yeah. say, yeah, whatever you say, I'm going to say the opposite. Who cares?
It's almost like going to a 49ers-Rams game and see one side or the other. You can't be neutral and say,
middle,
that was a nice play by the Rams. No, that's the Rams. You know,
that's absolutely right. Yeah. So I think how does the church respond?
Good question.
Youth ministry, ministering with the young people, or our outreach to young people as a church. We have the opportunity to build the society. We are putting the building blocks of who these young people are going to be when they grow up. So in a way, people that work or serve, teach young people, young Catholics, they're building the future. So how we do it is important, and that's where we come in and try to do our best to assist. Unfortunately, I mean, going even if 2 year process of preparation for confirmation is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't build a house 1 hour a day, 1 hour a week, and then in 2 years, even if you do it for, because it's like 6 months and 6 months, 12, in 12 years, you do it once a week, you're not going to build anything,
right?
You need to more time. So that's what we're trying to see, confirmation not be graduation, but to be something where we continue to learn.
Yeah, but it's a challenge.
It is. It is. And it's a challenge that needs to be approached by doing and by praying for, right, as well, with an open mind, a prayer for an open mind. We're so off topic.
No,
sorry. And I do that to you and your listeners all the time.
No,
sorry.
This is a very relevant topic.
If you know me, whenever you see me, you can tell me that I'm always. And people have approached me, say, hey, I heard you in the Bishop's Hour. So to that person, I think we have to. There's some movement that I read. One of the newspapers, Catholic newspapers, that say it's called Pray for Teens.
Uh-huh.
And is you just say, I'm going to, you click on a tab to say, I am volunteering myself to pray for teens. And then it tells you some instructions there. And I was like,
oh, that's good.
And it's like, that's it. You don't get, you can sign up to get a newsletter. But there's no
I'm not even going to pray for a specific thing. Uh-huh. I'm just going to pray for teens.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, and then I said, oh, this is such a cool thing. Right out, they had an article that the founders of this movement were meeting with Pope Francis, and it caught my attention. I said, oh, I can do that. I can pray a Hail Mary every day for teens. Not to tell God what to do with them. I'm just going to pray for them.
Right.
So God's will can be done in their life.
Yeah,
and that was so awesome. So I mean, I think that's part of the equation, to pray so God's will be done in the life of our teens.
Mm-hmm.
Not so I can pray that they're fixed, because I don't even know what's broken,
right?
And I don't even know what God's desire is for these young people. Yet I want to pray so God's will be done in their life,
right?
Not their own, just their own desires, yet so their desires can match God's will, and then we can start building society. So I think it's a two piece, is just giving resources on how to reach out, but also praying for God's will to be done.
That's a great idea. I think sometimes, many times, I know I'm guilty of it, and I'm sure many people are of kind of using prayer as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna solve this first, God, and if I need some help, I'll let you know. Mm-hmm. You know, that should be the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. Or we tell God how to solve it in our prayer.
Oh, yeah.
Lord, make sure that my son goes to college. Does this, and he's like, wait, God, I'm praying so your will be done in his life.
Right.
You know, open his eyes, open his ears.
Right.
Because I think in this society, I was watching American Idol. I watch American Idol. Sorry, I'm guilty of that. And they were talking about God, how God has been in this place. And they were talking a lot of, they were bringing in the judges, bringing in God, the word God, a lot. Hmm. And I was like, I was telling my kids, because we were watching it together, and I said, I wonder if we're talking about the same God. I wonder if we are discerning the same God, because I don't know. I don't think they can tell me who God is. I mean, without them telling me, you know, I've been praying for God's will to be done in my life. I'm gonna tell you. And many times we do that with trying to solve problems. We try to tell God how to do it, and I don't know if we're in the same page. You know?
Yeah. Well, the one thing that my wife and I always tell our kids, especially after a disappointment,
mm-hmm.
you know, something didn't happen. They didn't like get into the right college or school or didn't make the team or whatever, didn't get the job, the part-time job they needed after school, the kind of thing, and say, one day you're going to look back and you're going to say, boy, I'm glad that that didn't happen. I'm glad, you know. And inevitably they do. I know in my own life, the best things that ever happened to me, I was dragged kicking and screaming, saying, no. And it turned out, and the biggest disappointments ultimately turned, wow, boy, I'm glad I was saved for that because I was too stupid to see it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, or not ready. Like
I wasn't ready.
My wife and I, you met my wife, she and I, we grew up in the same places in Mexico. We went to the same high school, and we went to the same college time, yet we did not meet until we were both in the same ministry. What I always tell her is, if you had met me before, I would not have been the person that I needed to be,
right.
and we would have never ever had a friendship because I was not in a healthy place in my life. I said, so I'm so grateful that God kept us from meeting each other we were I can say meant to be. Because it was not easy. I mean, we still had work to do in our lives, but it wasn't as bad as before where, right. I mean, it would not have been a good experience for either one. So, you look back and you say, thank you, Jesus. Thank you for for allowing me whatever happened in my life to happen so I can be a better person.
Well, Alex, with Alex Barraza, we scheduled you to talk about World Youth
Day.
Two World Youth Days, actually.
Yes, activities. I have two different activities.
One in Portugal and one stateside.
I see.
That's
what we're doing. Yes. So World Youth Day, every four years, the young people of the world gather with
An annual event, but it's not. Does.
Well, it is. Annually, you're supposed to celebrate it on Christ the King Sunday.
Yeah, right.
It's the annual World Youth Day.
Right.
And then all those annual events lead you up to the World Youth Day, where everybody gathers together in celebration. It does feel like we've been talking about it forever. But it's happening.
It is happening.
We're like less it's than...
right around the corner now.
Yes, exciting. So what's going to happen is we have events for pilgrims going. We're calling that... we have a pilgrims mass in St. Isidore on July 1st at 11 a.m. And this is anyone going to World Youth Day in Lisbon.
So St. Isidore in Yuba City.
Because it's more central. And so anybody going there, they can go. And we're going to gather with Bishop Soto. And we're going to celebrate. And then we're going to have a little pizza afterwards so we can talk and talk about our expectations and what have you. And then for the pilgrims going to World Youth Day, we are going to gather in Lisbon on the Wednesday of the week. And we're going to gather in the Church of St. Anthony, not of Padua, but St. Anthony of Lisbon.
Right.
Because that's where St. Anthony of Padua was born. But they say his name should be St. Anthony of Lisbon.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's the house where St. Anthony of Padua was born, Lisbon. And
if you get lost, you just play St. Anthony.
Yeah, there you go. so we're going to go there, and we're going to have Mass. With Bishop Soto and the priests that are going, Father Mitch and Father Rash already said they were going to be there in their pilgrims. And then we're going to go to a dinner afterwards.
Very good.
To a restaurant. It's the way that the meal was described to me is Portuguese/Brazilian food.
Wow.
I don't know what that means.
Anytime, I haven't done a lot of foreign travel, but anytime I'm in another country, and everything is, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's everywhere, Starbucks, they're international. I go, no, let's eat the food that the people who live here eat.
Yeah. So we're going to have a dinner there, it has some, Right here it says Portuguese and Brazilian cuisine.
Excellent.
So whatever that means, Bob, I'll let you know. I'll take a picture, whatever they
can. Yes,
they
bring some back.
There is a charge for the dinner. It's not the full price, there is a cost to that. The masses are free.
Right.
Yet the dinner does have a little cost.
Very good.
For those of our young adults that cannot attend this time, we have something called World Youth Day Stateside.
Excellent.
And that one is the one that's going to be in Trinity Pines in Colfax. Right?
Just up the hill.
Mm-hmm. And that one is on the Saturday and the Sunday, August 5th and 6th.
Okay.
And we're going to try to do unite ourselves live.
Would that be an overnight retreat?
Yes.
Great.
For young adults.
For young adults.
It starts in the...
So what age are we talking about there?
Older than 18.
Older than 18. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes. Right here, we have it. The Catholic Church, we're all Catholic, right? Office in the Vatican has said that young adults are 18 to 39.
Right.
So you're almost missed. A couple of years.
Just missed.
Yeah.
Maybe if I dye my
then,
hair.
There you go. I'm going to cut my beard. That's what young adults are. All the information is on the website, on the SE.org events. You can sign up and you can do that. We're really trying to promote the activities in Lisbon.
Right.
So we can get together as a diocese and celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Alex, always, and you're going.
Yes.
And I want to hear all about, I want to hear all about it, but I want to hear about the food too.
Yes. Well, I have a list already of things that I want to eat. and see what that means.
I know that's not part of the official itinerary, but the shrine,
the Fatima, Our Lady Fatima Shrine. Yeah. We're gonna go on Sunday. We arrived there on Sunday, and our trip, the diocesan trip, takes us to Santiago de Compostela.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to stop at the shrine before we go.
Very good.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's, I want to see. And it's beautiful, the idea. It wasn't my idea like that, but I've been meditating. The theme of World Youth Day is Marian theme.
Mm-hmm.
Mary went with haste.
Right.
So we can start our pilgrimage by going and seeing Mary.
Yes.
That would be really significant spiritual.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't plan it like that. It was just like, hey, we're traveling. And then I saw the shrine and I said, we should stop there. So it wasn't, Alex is not that smart and spiritual. It was the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, the Holy Spirit's everywhere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Aren't we fortunate? Alex, always a joy to talk with you. We'll look forward to having you back on before World Youth Day.
Yes.
And definitely afterward.
And so we can share what the goodness of the Lord and see what the Lord, share what the Lord accomplished in our lives.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. God bless.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is James McCormick, President and CEO of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, James, for all you do and for that great introduction. Yeah, the Choral Society and Orchestra just does so many great things. But we're pleased to welcome in Angela Hassel, who is the Executive Director of Loaves and Fishes right here in Sacramento. Angela, good day to you.
Hi, Bob. It's good to hear from your voice again.
Good to hear your voice. How are things at Loaves and Fishes?
Yeah, we're doing okay. Things are starting to heat up, so we're starting to see more folks. But we're hanging on. We're hanging in there.
So, do you see more in the hot weather?
Sometimes, yeah. It kind of ebbs and flows. We have a little bit of a monthly cycle. We're at the beginning of the month when folks have more of their own resources. Our numbers tend to drop, and then we sort of climb back up towards the end of the month when folks run out of those other resources and need our services a little bit more, particularly our noon meal.
So are the vast majority or even 100% of the people you see, are they homeless or not necessarily?
The vast majority of the folks that we serve are homeless or living unhoused.
Mm-hmm.
Although we don't, as a rule, what many of our services are, we try to have as few barriers as possible. So we try to be barrier free. So we don't ask a lot of those identifying questions of folks. But we do know because we get to know them over time and they share more of their story with us over time. We do know that the vast majority of the folks that are coming here for our services are homeless. Yes.
So explain that term barrier-free. I hear it more and more now, and it mm-hmm. seems like it's becoming much more common, I guess.
Yeah. So for us, the idea is that we want our campus and our services to be as welcoming and as hospitable as possible. And, you know, many folks that are living in extreme poverty, every time they go somewhere to receive help, they have to fill out paperwork or, you know, have a meeting before they can do things. We try to take those situations away and provide what they need for their survival, whether that's food, whether that's a shower, without doing all of that, without a ton of paperwork and without a lot of those kind of meetings that somebody might make an appointment for and then come back, but they might not actually come back. We've learned over the years that when we can greet people as they show up today and as they appear today and do what we can to meet their needs to ensure their survival for right now, that serves us better in the long run than kind of gathering a lot of that information and data and things like that on people. Being as Loaves and Fishes doesn't accept any government funding, we have a little bit more freedom.
Uh-huh.
To kind of decide how our services are delivered. But our goal is always to have our campus be as open and hospitable as possible to folks so that we are approachable and so that they can get what they need and can access all the many things that we offer.
So, obviously, with the services you provide, there would mm-hmm. be a variety of government grants or programs that you could get, either federal or state or maybe even local money. Mm-hmm. Is that a real conscious decision to remain completely independent of that?
It's absolutely a conscious decision, and it's a decision that our board made 40 years ago in 1983 when they first formalized as a nonprofit organization in the state of California for Sacramento Lives and Fishes. It was a decision that our founders made back then to try to do this and try to make a go of this more formally and not accept any government funding. There's a lot of documentation, a lot of administrative time and energy spent on on the paperwork that happens when organizations apply, for, not only apply for, but accept and then kind of conclude some of those government grants. And they really wanted to prioritize being able to provide our services, not really have a lot of administrative overhead, and it's something that we've stuck with for 40 years, and that has worked out really well for us. Yes, is there a lot of government funding that we would qualify for that could really help our budgets and help our folks? That's likely, yes. But we're able to continue doing what we're doing with the grace of God and the generosity of our community. And so as long as that works, as long as we can keep doing that, that's what we'll do.
Sacramento, I've learned, is a very generous city.
And yeah,
the whole diocese, the whole North State is, I shouldn't just say us, because I know here in California, people are very generous. I remember during Hurricane Katrina a number of years ago, talking to the civil defense people in Louisiana,
oh, wow.
And they said, wow, the Diocese of Sacramento, I think, led the country in, just financial contributions. And they said, in terms of people showing up to work, the Knights of Columbus and St. Vincent de Paul, and those, we couldn't have recovered without those people.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. I think we see that every day on our campus, not only with monetary donations, but with volunteers. Just our dining room alone uses between 25 and 30 volunteers a day to serve that meal, to prep and cook and serve that meal every day, and then clean up afterwards. We're enormously grateful to the folks who are giving of their time and their talents in our programs, and we wouldn't be able to run Loaves and Fishes without them either.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So what are your biggest challenges as we head into the summer?
Yeah, many of our folks, some of the sweeps and different things that are happening in the various encampments where people have formed communities through the pandemic and been able to achieve a bit of safety and community, a lot of those places are no longer going to be permitted by the county and the city. And so as folks kind of disperse and move on, we're seeing a lot more people here at Loaves and Fishes for our noon meal and for many of our other services. So things that will kind of keep folks protected from the elements, we can always use donations of things like tents and tarps and sleeping bags, but also one of the biggest things for the summertime is bottled water.
Bottled water. I've heard that before.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we've talked about that before. It's, as the weather starts to heat up, one of the biggest risks for folks is dehydration, and we're giving out ice and bottled water every single day, not only in our dining room, but also in our other programs at the end of the day, so that folks can kind of get through the heat of the day and then the evening hours and come back again tomorrow.
Boy, that's great. Are you able to store a lot of ice?
We're not able to store a ton of ice. We have a couple of different ice machines on campus that making ice all throughout the day. And then we kind of, I know in Friendship Park in particular, we give it all out at the end of the day, and that often takes 15, 20 minutes and then we're out, kind of a thing. But we don't have major freezer space for things like ice. We reserve that for things like frozen meats and other foods.
Yeah, you don't want people bringing you bags of ice, but you do want them bringing you bottled water.
Absolutely. Yeah, bottled water of all sizes, anything from the small single serve bottles to we can take gallon bottles as well, and that's a nice thing to be able to send with somebody for the night or with a family at the end of the day or on the weekend, so that they'll have plenty of clean water.
So you mentioned sweeps.
Yeah.
I've noticed many times. One day there was a, I'm not going to name the streets, but one street is just maybe 10, 12 blocks of just homeless on both sides of the street, and come through a day or two later and there's nobody.
Yeah.
Or it's all, there's still a lot of stuff left on the street, and city crews or county crew, whoever they are clean, scooping it all up and throwing it away. But then I also noticed very quickly new encampments, like on a side street very close to where that was. What's happening with the sweeps, and how is that coming from City Hall? Is it coming from county government, state government? Where is it coming from?
Typically, it's coming from both city, depending on where the street in particular is located. It may be in the city's jurisdiction or the county's jurisdiction, but they are both actively right now kind of trying to clear out some of those spaces that are built up over time. So it could be both city and county of Sacramento where it's happening right now. And that, you know, we know of one particularly large and over time established camp that was cleared out a week or two ago, and there are more. So the process is that law enforcement will show up at the camp and will provide a notice to all the folks staying there that in, you know, X number of days, I think it's usually 3 to 5 days, depending on the location and the different dynamics, they will be kind of coming through and cleaning it out. And so folks have the choice to either leave and try to relocate at that point or stay until it happens and potentially suffer other consequences of their belongings being taken or the possibility of citations and even jail time sometimes. So it's a... The hard part about that is that there aren't enough shelter beds or, you know, safe places where people can camp or transitional housing places for people to go to. So it's not, you know, it's not that that camps are the greatest solution of all time to end homelessness. They're not. They're not. They're not the greatest place for folks to be, and nobody really wants to be living in a tent forever. The bigger piece of the puzzle is, and the problem is that we don't have enough affordable housing, and we don't have enough shelter beds for folks to go. So when these encampments get swept and get moved and dispersed and then kind of like reform other places, it's because there's nowhere else for people to go, and they're not being provided with any viable options for where they can safely go sleep.
So is having a tent, let's just use Sacramento, on a you know, side of a city street, is that technically illegal?
So
law enforcement can enforce that once somebody decides this is going to be a priority. And sometimes, because like you say, you see these sweeps, and then sometimes you see it go on and on with nothing, and then all of a sudden it's all cleared out. But there's not, the, in conjunction with a sweep, there's not a plan for where are these people? We're going to sweep them away as if that's going to end the problem. There's not a plan that, okay, we're sweeping 100 residents from this camp, but we don't have a plan for those 100 people.
What I've heard is often the message is that we don't have anywhere for you to go, you just can't be here.
Yeah. It's not much of an option.
Which is not an option really at all. It just kind of perpetuates the problem and kicks the can further down the line between what those folks are, you know, any of the folks in those camps or any stability and any services that they are accessing. It kind of pushes them further from those things and a bit further from the stability that we all need to live full lives that are, you know, where we can heal and be members of our society. So it's hard and it's traumatic for the folks who are experiencing it and either having to move or losing all their belongings and having to start all over again and again and again. It can be incredibly devastating for folks experiencing it.
I was reading the Portland, Oregon paper, the Oregonian, the other day, mm-hmm. and they have a pretty significant homeless population in Portland, and they have hired an outfit from a private company from Southern California that had experience in Southern California, where they actually come in. They have to find the area. I mean, it has to be provided by the city, and they actually construct the tents and everything else. I can't remember the name of the company. It's obviously a for-profit company, but apparently had a pretty good track record in the Los Angeles area, and at least somewhere in Southern California. And Portland has hired this organization, and I mean, we're talking about an extensive area that even has a cafeteria, where food is available apparently 24 hours a day. And obviously there are rules and regulations and everything, and I'm not sure how people qualify, but it apparently becomes a tent city. That's sort of one response to this, but I don't know if that would work here in Sacramento or not.
It would depend on what space was available and where we could put it. I know that there has been some debate over time about doing something along those lines over at Cal Expo, and mm-hmm. and I'm not certain kind of what areas were being looked at specifically over at Cal Expo. I think kind of Old Treasure Island area is used as respite stuff once in a while. I think part of the problem and part of the reason that things like the city's master plan, when they looked at each district and tried to identify areas where some smaller communities could be permitted and things like that. I think part of the problem is that there's a lot of resistance from different neighborhoods and from different places that everybody wants to try to solve homelessness, but nobody wants it near them. So there's a lot of kind of political red tape that gets in the way and becomes a barrier to actually providing any of these things. So I am relieved to hear that Portland is kind of trying some different things. I think they have a pretty good reputation for being down for some experimental things
do.
And kind of giving it a go. And I'm hopeful that Sacramento can get into that space and try out some new things too. Because I think unless we're willing to try, unless we're willing to kind of come together as a community and say we're not going to do this anymore, we're gonna provide folks with a dignified place to sleep and to rest and to rebuild their lives, we're not going to see homelessness get any better in our community anytime soon.
The thing that intrigued me about it, I know Portland pretty well, it had 24-hour security. I believe it's actually going to be fenced. It hasn't been built yet. They've just kind of agreed. I mean, I think they really wanted to kick all the tires with this company and hear any complaints that may have come from their other operations. But that it had 24-hour security. It had food on site. That was part of the deal. You know, not that you were bringing your own food in and stuff, but that if you were hungry, there's a place in right within this camp, and that there was security and personnel on hand at all times, and mm-hmm. and I think some that are even trying to connect with social services and those kinds of things, and that the I think the tents are like on maybe wood platforms, something like that, because you're talking about an area where it rains, and not that it hasn't rained in California this year, but I'll keep a good eye on it, because I think there's some potential there. I mean, obviously, everybody's trying a million different things, and so far we haven't solved it. But folks like Loaves and Fishes are certainly helping people along the way.
We're doing the best that we can to make sure that nobody walks away from Loaves and Fishes at the end of the day hungry. Accomplish that every day, then we're living out our mission, and we'll keep doing that until there are no more people that are hungry that need us.
Yeah.
That's what our founders set out to do. I don't think that they ever anticipated that we'd still be here 40 years later.
Yeah.
But here we are, and we'll keep doing it as long as we can.
Amen. Very well said. So bottled water, people can just drop it off at the headquarters?
Absolutely. Yep. Our warehouse is open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 2:45 p.m. at 1351 North C Street. If folks would like to have it delivered to us, like if you buy things on Amazon, you're welcome to use that address, 1351 North C Street. We get deliveries from Amazon quite often, and so that's an option as well. If it's a little bit out of your way and you want to just send us some water, that's great. If you would like to deliver it as well, that's also amazing, and we'd be very grateful for anything that folks are willing to contribute.
Very good. Angela Hassel, thanks so much for all you do, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Yeah, God bless you and your mission. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be no quick break. that's right. I forgot. I thought we were in the middle of the show. Our producer Gabe is telling me no. This is this is so long for today. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold. Significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships, alliance, dependence. Who will still be here when I fall? But the one thing I don't question. Love you, yeah.
for my